Talk Zone presents the Geek Speak Radio Show with your hosts, Henry and Romo. Your top spot for everything entertainment and pop culture, including TV, movies, comics, casting news, and more. Now, here are your hosts, Henry and Romo.
Well, just Henry, at least. Romo is out celebrating, I think, still the Giants winning the World Series. I'm celebrating because I get my fringe back, finally. I get my fringe back on Thursday, but I think it was going to happen anyway, because you can't leave a show like that off the schedule. So today we are going to continue something what we did a little bit yesterday, the week before. People we met at APE, the Alternative Press Expo, which happened a couple of weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. I can't remember how long ago it was now. But today we're going to talk to somebody named Atif Gill, artist of 48 Days in Tokyo. This is someone actually that my wife was who was with me that day. She found him.
Yeah. He was at APE, and the interest that I had in his table was different from everyone else's, because he had a bunch of buildings on his cards, and he had an iPad actually on his table. So I was like, oh, look at this guy has an iPad. Let's go check it out. But he had
that he borrowed from work with permission.
Yes, he did, and he
not
had
that
his,
kind of borrow.
He had his webcomic on there that he had created.
Yeah, so we'll talk to that. So about that, what is it called? 48 Days in Harajuku, Tokyo. And I'll ask him if I'm pronouncing that correctly. But before we do that, let's talk about other conventions first. First of all, the big one, Comic-Con 2011, the one in San Diego. Yeah, I think you guys have heard of it. Again, yesterday, all of you guys that went on there, thanks a lot. You crashed the servers. So now you have to check back on November 8th. They'll give you a new registration date. That's not the registration date. I don't think so. It just says check back, and it will give you a new one. That I'm passing that on from David Glanzer. Trying to get a hold of him, but like I said, they were a little busy. So all you got to do is go on there, comiccon.org, or go to our site, geekspeakbetashow.com. I have a link on there. Hey, there's Romo. A link
Hello.
On there. And again, November 8th is when you go back to check to see if that's when you can register or not. What's the matter? Were you out there celebrating?
Yes, I was last night. Go Giants, right?
Yeah, I'm celebrating because I get my fringe back.
Yeah, it was fun. I mean, it was packed. Yeah, of course, you guys were hurt on the news. I mean, the amount of people were partying on the street, celebrating like if it was 1999. Just to reference.
What, old people or what? 1999 was a long time ago.
No, you know what I mean. People on top of buses, partying, good times.
Really? Were you one of the people on the buses?
No. I was one of the persons shaking their head saying, this is crazy.
Producer
get out of here.
Producer Damon took the bus here today. And he came in choking, sneezing, because he said somebody sprayed mace on the ground on the bus.
Wow.
So I guess that's their way of celebrating.
Yeah, contaminating
Welcome
everyone
to San
on the
Francisco.
Bus.
I mean, Cisco.
Yeah.
So anyway, telling them about Comic-Con 2011. You guys want to go and get your passes. Again, November 8th is the day to check on there, comiccon.org. Or you can go to ours, geekspeakradioshow.com. I do have a link up there so you can go and see when, when you can go and get
your passes
for next year. Good luck on that too also. Like you said yesterday, I think you have better luck getting college classes than you do a Comic-Con 2011 passes.
That's right.
Something else happening, another convention happening this weekend, is Mid-Ohio Con. It's the 30th year. Just got it from the Hero Initiative. Can't talk today. And I wasn't even cheering for your Giants. I was cheering for my fringe, actually.
Yeah.
The Hero Initiative celebrates Mid-Ohio Con's 30th year. That's happening, like I said, this weekend, November 6th and 7th, in Exhibit Hall E of the Greater Columbus Convention Center. So those of you in Columbus, Ohio, because we are nationwide, but those of you in Columbus, Ohio, you can go there. And there will be, again, like last time, the heroin scent. From Black Phoenix Alchemy Lab, they're gonna have that for sale there, and they have all of the possible scents you could want.
Mm-hmm. Even the Star Wars
there. Yeah, you're also gonna get original Archie covers, number 600. That will be for sale. All of that benefiting the Hero Initiative, and also like they always do, special guests Saturday, 11:30 to 12:30 will be Kurt Busiek. 1:30 to 2:30, Herb Trent will be there. Sunday, November 7th, Matt Wagner. We'll be there from 10:30 to 11:30. So
that's a good cause.
That is at Mid-Ohio Con celebrating their 30th year. The Hero Initiative will be out there. Look mm-hmm. for them. those of you who are out there in the Ohio area. So, what was I asking about? Your Giants?
That they won and the World Series champions.
I know you
want to
talk about it, so go ahead, get it out now.
No, I'm already done. I got it off my chest yesterday, so I'm good. At least they won. Like, again, I am a bandwagon jumper. I'm going to admit. I grew up as an A's fan, so I'm a big American League fan. And, I didn't root for them in 2002 because I didn't like Barry Bonds and the team itself. But now, let's go to present day. Hey, I'm a bandwagon jumper going for, this is a good team. I mean, they showed and proved that they're worth, being the champions. And so
there was a lot of celebrating out here, actually.
Yeah, I was really involved in this, World Series. Not so much. I mean, I was really involved when the Boston, Red Sox first won. In 2003, but, it's cool just to be around it and to see it, you know, in your own backyard. Would you agree? I mean, having the World Series being San Francisco.
Well, San Francisco City Hall was painted orange, not painted orange, I'm sorry.
The lights were
lighted orange.
Yeah.
And the Ferry Building was also orange, and they had the big screens out there in Civic Center Plaza
so people
can watch and celebrate.
Kind of felt like the World Cup all over again.
Yeah, right? Just a different sport.
Yeah. But again, it was fun. At least I could get my fringe back, though, because I was excited. On Thursday, I was, yes, fringe is back.
Yeah, that's all I cared about.
Yeah.
But I got to say, though, I mean, I lived here in San Francisco during the Super Bowl years for the 49ers.
Yeah.
And the celebrating, even after it became, you know, like breathing, fall comes, leaves change.
Yeah.
Time changes, 49ers win the Super Bowl. It used to be, you know, like breeding.
Yeah.
It was just expected they were going to win the Super Bowl. Even after the fifth one, the celebrating went all through the night, all night long. Here it was just a couple, and then that's it. No more.
Yeah. So you're trying to say that football is San Francisco's sport, not baseball?
Well, I'm just saying that I think San Francisco forgot how to celebrate because they haven't had a championship here in such a long time.
That is true. It's been around.
So we're celebrating that.
Yeah,
when we come back, let me
years.
Take a quick break right now. When we come back, like I said, we will talk to Asif Gill about his 48 days in Tokyo. So we can take a quick break. We'll be back and do just that.
GeekSpeak Radio Show will be right back. We're just a lot of talk. And now, ladies and gentlemen, for your further listening pleasure, TalkZone.com, Internet Talk Radio. Calling all fanboys. It's time to get back to the Geek Speak Radio Show on TalkZone.com with your hosts, Henry and Romo.
And we're back on the Geek Speak Radio Show. Everybody got a voice now?
Yeah.
Especially you?
I'm done. I'm done Giants. I'm over it.
Over there cheering for
the tomorrow
Giants
the
during
starts.
The break. And I started cheering for the New York football Giants. Anyway, like I said, welcome back to the Geek Speak Radio Show. So I gave you some information on the big convention, Comic-Con, the one in San Diego 2011. Again, go on there, comiccon.org. You guys crashed the servers. That just means it's going to be even bigger than before.
It
keeps getting bigger and bigger. But go on to November 8th. They will tell you when you can register again. And that I'm not saying that's the day, neither are they, but just saying go on there November 8th. That's when. MidOhioCon. I keep saying .com. MidOhioCon celebrating its 30th year in Ohio. Obviously, that happens this weekend. Hero Initiative will be there. They'll have the scent that they had, heroin scent on sale. They'll also have a couple of really cool guests on there, all benefiting the Hero Initiative. So go on there. Another convention that we went to, we talked to some of them yesterday. That was the APE convention, Alternative Press Expo, put on by the same people who do San Diego Comic-Con.
Yeah.
And like I was saying, this one actually is one that my wife found, and she found it really interesting. So tell us a little bit about that before we go to them.
Oh, it was about it was a guy who had a table with all his stuff out, very neatly put out.
Duh.
And I just found it interesting because he had these great characters appearing on an iPad, and I kept saying, "Wow, what is this all about? What does he have?" And of course, APE is for the smaller press, those who don't get the big, gigantic
spotlight
like at Comic Con or
WonderCon. Just say it's not for Marvel
and
DC. That's all I have to say.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, there were a lot of people there, but this one in particular caught my eye because of the characters he drew, and the comic took place in Tokyo, so I was interested in that because it was a different setting. It's not like your typical Metropolis or...
So does manga, not just joking.
Yeah, well, he does do some of that in his comic there, but when I was talking to him, he was also trying to get a book published.
The one thing that you told me that was really interesting was the fact that he actually got the idea while actually traveling in Asia, right? In
yes.
Japan, you said?
Yeah.
So that's a really cool thing.
Yeah, it's kind of cool that he's
able to document his whole journey.
Sure, yeah, he did.
In his book. That's cool.
So 48 Days in Tokyo is how long he stayed in Harajuku, Tokyo. And he, if you look at his work, he's put all the people that he's met into a character, including himself.
Nice. I wonder if I'm one of the characters. No, just joking.
What's wrong with you?
Why?
Did you get hit by a baseball?
No. No, I didn't.
Right after standing in McCovey Cove and trying to catch one, you realize that, oh, wait, I can't catch.
No, I actually fell in the water.
Anyway, so let's hear directly from the creator of 48 Days. That is Asif Gill. Asif, you there?
Yes, I'm here.
There we go. We had a little problem with our phone line. So, Yeah, we hear you fine now. As I was saying, tell us a story of how you came up. First, your background, and then how it led into the book.
Yeah, no problem. Well, to go all the way back, I studied Japanese in college, and that was around the summer of 2008. So I did a study abroad program in the Kansai region of Japan. So I was kind of like northeast of Kyoto. So I was really deep in the Kansai region. And I really liked it there. So I was, you know, I said to myself, I'm at this point. Do I want to stay here, you know, past the summer and maybe try to become like an English teacher or go back to college and finish school? And I was about a year to go in my computer science program. So, you know, I just thought about things and, you know, the people that I met there and how English teachers kind of like settled into their lives. And I went the degree route and I finished school. You know, it was always my intention to go back there, but, you know, money or, you know, being able to take time off, it just never lined up for me. So what happened was in February of 2009, you know, all the stars lined up and I was able to, you know, take 2 months of vacation from work because I've accumulated that much. And they recently instituted a use it or lose it plan. And I had a significant amount of frequent flyer miles. So what I did was I rented an apartment in Harajuku for 2 months and started my journey.
Right, and that led to the book. And you also have the webcomic, which is you guys can take a look at both at 48intokyo.com, which we have linked up on geekspeakradioshow.com. So tell me, when did you decide to do the webcomic?
That came about in about December of 2009. I was running a little bit slow as far as the illustrations that I was doing and the writing for the actual travelogue. So I figured, you know, I had a show that I was going to just to test out, you know, interest to see if, you know, people would be interested in this or not. It was a local show in Ypsilanti, Michigan. Mm-hmm. I had this website because I'm a software engineer by trade. So, you know, as far as the promotional and being able to put that up, that was pretty easy for me. But, you know, I had this website that I was giving people and it just came to my mind that like, if I don't have something for them to come back to, then there's no use in giving them this URL. So, there was a pretty big amount of stories that I didn't put in to the travelogue that made it into the web comic. And with the webcomic, I like to try a lot of different styles just to, you know, just to get the feel of, you know, what works and what doesn't work. But generally, I do an 8-panel webcomic. And I guess you could say that the base media that I use is a watercolor pencil and ink. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I've done stuff, a short run of Yonkoma strip comics, probably for like a month or two, just to try that out. Some of those stories were a little bit shorter. And currently I'm doing Sumi ink.
Okay. And I was reading also on 48intokyo.com, which, by the way, is up on geeksforgetashow.com. I was reading that you actually went back. This is where the book and the webcomic came from. What was different for you from the first time when you studied there to the second time, which was, I think it was like 10 years later, wasn't it, when you went back to Japan? What were the differences for you?
Well, the Kansai region, which includes Kyoto and Osaka and Kobe and Hiroshima, it's a little bit more slow in terms of, you know, the pace of life. And where I studied, it was pretty rural. It was just the language school, and then, you know, there was like one shopping mall and, you know, one bar. I wanted to really experience, you know, crazy, crazy Tokyo. So, you know, I've been to Tokyo before, you know, as like a week trip. And I just wanted to see what it was like to live in that city as opposed to the rural side of Japan, which, you know, my first experience actually came from. So I was able to find an apartment in like an awesome, awesome spot. Everything was within walking distance, and it was just easy to do anything.
Okay, so again, the 48intokyo.com is the website. It's up on geekspeakradioshow.com. I'm going to take a break right now. You guys can go on there real quick while we take this break, and then come back and listen to, excuse me, where'd that come from? To Ozzy Gill talking to us about 48 Days in Tokyo. We'll get into that in just a few minutes. But first, we played it yesterday since, again, it is appropriate for today. Tomorrow, New Comics Day. Here's the list of what's coming out tomorrow in your comic book shop. Here are the titles for New Comics Wednesday. First, from DC Comics, Adventure Comics number 520, Batman and Robin number 16, Batman and Robin Deluxe Hardcover Volume 2, Batman vs. Robin, Batman Catwoman Follow the Money number 1, Batman Confidential number 50, Bright as Day number 13, Cartoon Network Action Pack number 53, DC Comics presents The Flash Green Lantern number 1, Deviated Gods and Monsters number 8, Freedom Fighters number 3, Green Lantern Agent Orange trade paperback, House of Mystery number 31, How to Understand Israel in 60 Days or Less hardcover, iZombie number 7, Jonah Hex number 61, JSA All-Stars number 12, Looney Tunes number 192, Red Hood Lost Days number 6, Scooby-Doo Where Are You number 3, Secret 6 number 27, Sergeant Rock The Lost Battalion trade paperback, Superboy number 1, and Sweet Tooth number 15. That's DC Comics. From Marvel Comics, New Comics on Wednesday will be Amazing Spider-Man number 647, Avengers Academy number 6, Avengers X-Men trade paperback Maximum Security, Bullseye Perfect Game number 1, Captain America Man Out of Time number 1, Chaos War number 3, Deadpool Merc with a Mouth hardcover head trip, Generation Hope number 1, Iron Man Legacy number 8, Iron Man Thor number 1, Kabuki hardcover volume 1, Namor First Mutant number 3, New Avengers Hardcover Volume 1, New Avengers Hardcover Volume 2, New Avengers Hardcover Volume 3, New Avengers Hardcover Volume 5, Ozma of Oz number 1, Punisher in Blood number 1, Punisher Max Kingpin trade paperback, Scarlet number 3, Sense and Sensibility premium hardcover, Siege trade paperback, Spider-Man number 7, Strange Tales 2 number 2, Taskmaster number 3, Warriors 3 number 1, Wolverine number 3, Women of Marvel number 1, X-Men to Serve and Protect number 1, Young Allies number 6. From Archie Comics, Veronica number 203, From Boom 28 Days Later number 16, Crossed Family Values number 5, Irredeemable number 19. Dark Horse Comics, New Comics on Wednesday, BPRD Trade Paperback volume 14, King of Fear, Buffy the Vampire Slayer number 38, Last Gleaming part 3. Dynamite, Boys number 48, Boys Trade Paperback volume 7, The Innocents, Kevin Smith, Kato number 5, and from Image Comics, Godland number 33. That's a list of the comics you'll find at your comic book store this Wednesday for New Comics Wednesday. We'll put the list up on GeekSpeakRadioShow.com after the show and repeat this list tomorrow, so make sure you listen.
Geek Speak Radio Show will be right back. The best in internet talk radio.
A mind-bendingly ingenious plan to control the universe.
We're building the best internet talk radio on the planet. TalkZone.com. Back to the Geek Speak Radio Show.
One of the most important things in your life.
On TalkZone.com.
Let's take a walk on the wild side.
Here's Henry and Romo.
And here we are. Welcome back to the Geek Speak Radio Show. Conversation with Ozzie Gill, author and artist. I can't talk today. I wasn't even cheering for your Giants for 48 days in Tokyo. The website again is 48intokyo.com. We have a link up on geekspeakradioshow.com. You guys can go on there and take a look at some excerpts from the book, and also the webcomic is on there. So actually, my wife, Ozzie, had a question for you.
Hey, Ozzie.
Hi.
It's Michelle.
Hi, we've been speaking via email. Yes.
Yes, we have. We have.
And we met an ape.
Yes, we did. And I just wanted to know, when you first went to Japan, when you were in college, were you already drawing comics, or were you just there just for a week hanging out, or as an exchange student or something like that?
I went there for a summer intensive program. So it was basically studying Japanese, and that was it.
Ah, okay. And then when you got, so finally you're 10 years later, you get to go back for 2 months and you're there in Tokyo. Were you already drawing comics, or how did you come up with that idea just to start drawing about what was around you?
It's pretty interesting because, most of my artistic background is in life drawing. When I was in college, I took almost enough classes to be a fine arts major. But I was really heavy into printmaking and life drawing. I didn't really draw comics. It just came to me around December 2009, basically.
And then once you were there in your cool apartment with all these great things in the middle of the city, how did you come about drawing all your characters?
Well, that's also another interesting thing. I told all my friends here in Michigan, you know, that I was going to Tokyo. And, you know, a couple of them, we could say like four of them, were really excited about that. And they said, oh, you're getting an apartment? Well, we're going to come and visit you. So a lot of the main characters in the story are actually my friends back at home. They came and visited me for about 10 days. And then the Japanese characters are people that I met there.
Okay, and again, you can see all that on 48intokyo.com, which we have up on geekspeakradioshow.com. Talking to Ozzie Gill, artist and author of 48 Days in Harry. Am I pronouncing this right? Harajuku?
Awesome.
What is it?
Pronouncing what, my name or Harajuku?
Yeah, Harajuku.
Harajuku, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Harajuku Tokyo, that's the name of the book. And what is the status of the book? It's not out yet, right?
No, I have 145 pages written. I've laid a good amount of it out in InDesign, but another thing that I was doing was I created my own font out of my handwriting to make it look, you know, the way I wanted it to, because I originally used transparency paper that I was going to lay over the illustrations for each entry, but it just didn't work out because of, you know, I was writing stuff down as fast as I could, and there was a lot of grammatical errors or typos. And it just didn't, I just wasn't satisfied with that. So I ended up having to type everything in to my computer. And I figured that creating a font of my handwriting was the closest thing. The problem is some of the entries are a little bit too long. So I'm going to have to split them even further and create more illustrations based on that.
Okay. What do you hope readers take away from the book when they read it?
I mean, I hope it's entertaining. I mean, that's what I always seem to have these strange encounters with people that just say things to me that are weird, or just strange things happen. And, just like maybe like a guide of where you might want to go in terms of like bars. I didn't really find anything when I was going to Tokyo that would spark my interest in terms of like, oh, this travel book, you know, it's listing the number of bars, but it doesn't really tell you how the experience of being in this bar or being in this restaurant or going to this site really is. So I wanted to give it a little bit more of like a personal, I guess you could say a personal viewpoint of it, just to drive it home a little bit more about, you know, what the specific place in Tokyo or this other place in Tokyo is like and what you might want to, you know, check out or not check out.
So kind of like a tour guide is what it's going to turn out to be, really, with some personal stories is what it sounds like.
Yeah. The travelogue portion of it, yes. So that's the main book. But the webcomic is, you know, situational anecdotes that happened. Like I've had problems finding a place or, you know, I was looking for a certain item and I couldn't find it. And it was hard to get someone to tell me where things are or just run-ins with weird people, you know.
Yeah, because unless I misunderstood you, they're two different things, right? The book follows one story, and the webcomic has other things that won't be in the book, right?
Correct. So when the whole project is over, they kind of intertwine, but they don't really – there isn't much overlap. They just – I guess you could say that the webcomics kind of slide in between some of the entries.
Mm-hmm. Right. And like I said, we like I mentioned at the beginning, we met you a couple weeks ago. It was a pleasure meeting you, by the way, at APE. Where can we see you next? Where are you going to be? What convention are you going to be at next?
I'm actually going to be at the Mid-Ohio Con this weekend.
Okay. Yeah, I mentioned that right before we started. So you're going to be there this weekend. Anywhere else we can see you?
I'm going to be at Space in Ohio. I think that's in May or March, somewhere between March and May. But Space is the next show. Actually, it's not. The Emerald City. I'm going to be there too.
Okay, and that'll all be up on the website, right?
Yeah.
And that's 48intokyo.com. You guys can go on there on geekspeakradioshow.com. The links are on there. Take a look at that. So Azeev Gill, again, artist, author, 48 Days in Harajuku, Tokyo. 48 in Tokyo is the website. Thanks a lot for coming on. Again, it was a pleasure meeting you at APE. We wish you a lot of luck with the book.
Thanks so much.
No
great
problem.
Meeting you, Henry and Michelle.
Yeah, you too.
Okay. You too.
Okay, there you go. You have a voice now again, Romo?
Yeah, I do.
Kind of.
It's coming
he
back.
He makes me want to go to Japan.
Well, they, not, I know. Not what, Romo? During the interviews, talking about Japan made me hungry. I was craving sushi. I was craving sushi for some reason. I was like, sushi. Like, I mean, of course, that always happens to people that, I mean, right? I'm not the only one.
In this studio, yeah, you are the only one.
Well, in America, not really. But, yeah, that was really cool. I mean, it's a good concept for a book. It inspires me or anyone out there to take a look. Like, just imagine if you're
to be more creative on your vacation.
Thank you.
I mean, again, you bring up the American thing. Us as Americans, when we go on vacation, we really go on vacation. We don't want to hear cell phones. We don't hear anything. No Facebook updates. None of that stuff. We just want to go Disneyland, wherever you're going, and relax. That's it.
Yep.
Azeev, he the first time he went there as a student, the second time he went there was actually just as a trip because he wanted to go back, and he did. And he said, you know what? I'm going to do something special with this.
Yeah.
And he did. That's the book and also the webcomic that came out of it.
That's cool.
Very creative. Next time you go on vacation, you have a homework assignment.
That's right. Especially it being in New Zealand.
Right. So that was that. That was I think that's the last person we have, actually, from the Alternative Press Expo that we met.
Yeah.
Scheduled for the show. We met a lot of great people out there. And again, everybody that goes to the conventions, Azeev, he mentioned he's going to be at Mid-Ohio Con this weekend. I mentioned Hero Initiative is going to have a booth on there, so you have two people to go say hi to.
Yeah.
And tell him you heard him on the Geek Speak Radio show. Also, don't forget Comic-Con 2011, the passes. They went on sale for about 2 seconds yesterday. You guys crashed the servers. Go on comiccon.org or geekspeakradioshow.com. The link is on there, and they will tell you to go back on November 8th, but I just told you, so you can skip all that and just go back on November 8th.
Yeah.
And that's not the day that they go on sale. That's not what it says on there. It just says to go back there and they'll give you a date. It could be that day or they just could give you a new one. We'll
yeah.
see. So let me take a break. When we come back, remember when I was playing with the Brom button?
Yeah.
Which is the Hans Inception
Zimmer.
Theme.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hans Zimmer, you want to hear from him?
Of course I do.
I talked about this yesterday. We didn't have time.
I remember.
Yeah. Coming up next, we're going to get Hans Zimmer interview. Talking about Inception, what went into it, went to the music, why he did Batman. He knows you know him for Batman Begins and The Dark Knight, those great themes that everybody hums and whistles every time you see him. He didn't want to do Batman.
Huh. So we're going to have to wait and see.
He wanted to work with Christopher Nolan, but he didn't want to do Batman.
Wow.
We'll hear about that, Inception, and everything else right after this.
This is the Geek Speak Radio Show Buzz Report for Tuesday, November 1st. Here's what's buzzing right now. Joel Edgerton will co-star with Jennifer Garner and Pete Hedges, The Odd Life of Timothy Green. The movie is about a childless couple unable to conceive who bury all their wishes for a baby in a box in their backyard. One day, they wake up to find that a child is born, but the child isn't what it appears to be. Joel Edgerton will next be seen in The Thing prequel and in Warrior, starring alongside Tom Hardy. Sony Pictures has acquired the rights to Ides of March, George Clooney's film adaptation of the Broadway play Farragut North. The release date has been set for limited release in December 2011 and wide release in January 2012. James Nesbitt has been cast as Beaufort in the Hobbit films, and newcomer Adam Brown has been cast as Ori. They join Martin Freeman, Richard Armitage, Aidan Turner, Rob Kaczynski, Graham McTavish, John Callan, Stephen Hunter, Mark Hadlow, and Peter Hamilton. The Hobbit films are set to be released in 3D in December 2012 and December 2013. Tarsem Singh will be directing the Brett Ratner-produced Snow White movie from Relativity Media. The film was called The Brothers Grimm Snow White, but now is untitled. Universal Pictures has Snow White and the Huntsman in the works, and Disney also has a version called Snow White and the Seven. Leonardo DiCaprio is set to produce and star in The Devil in the White City, an adaptation of Eric Larson's 2003 nonfiction book. Leo will play a role that he's never tried before, serial killer. The story and film will be based on serial killer Dr. H.H. Holmes, who is said to have murdered between 27 and 200 people in Chicago at the time of the World's Fair of 1893. He would use the fair to lure people to his hotel, later called the Murder Castle, and murder them and sell their body parts for scientific study. Ghostbusters 3 may begin filming in May 2011, which would put it in line for a summer 2012 release. That's what's buzzing right now, and that's the Geek Speak Radio Show Buzz Report.
Geek Speak Radio Show will be right back. You've discovered TalkZone.com, the best in internet talk radio. Calling all fanboys.
Here to have a little fun.
Here to have a little fun.
It's time to get back to the Geek Speak Radio Show on TalkZone.com.
No, actually, I have to save the world.
With your hosts, Henry and Romo.
And we're back on the Geek Speak Radio Show on Tuesday, the second day after the World Series finally is over. I get my fringe back. That's all that matters to me.
Yes.
It is over, right?
It is over.
We're not going to go for 20 games.
It's done. No more. I mean, just wait till tomorrow because the parade's tomorrow, and so that's going to be more traffic. But until then, you know, after that, it's done. It's completely over.
Not for me because I'm here in the studio. Nice and safe. Nice and warm.
That's true. No, but I wanted to go on to what you were saying before we took that break about Hans Zimmer, because for me personally, Hans Zimmer is Christopher Nolan's go-to guy as far as any film, Batman,
George and Steven Inception, have John Williams.
Yeah.
JJ has Michael Giacchino.
Uh-huh.
Christopher Nolan has Hans Zimmer.
Yeah.
They just go together.
I know that, but it's very interesting that the remark that you, I mean, the news that I heard that you said that Hans Zimmer doesn't want to work on Batman 3. So
no, he didn't say that. I didn't say that either.
Wait, what was it that you said then?
Get that baseball bat out of your ears. No, what I said is you're going to hear him. We're going to hear an interview right now from Hans Zimmer. He's talking about, this was done actually, I think it was this past weekend or a couple weekends ago. There was actually a press screening of Inception and Hans Zimmer. There was a Q&A with him afterwards. But this was done at, where was it done? The Recording Academy, which is the people that put on the Grammy Awards.
Yeah.
It's called the Recording Academy. They have a big, you know, huge screen.
Mm-hmm.
And they showed Inception and they had Hans Zimmer there. And then he had a Q&A with everybody after it was moderated by Mike Manavlos, who was the president of film music and publishing at Universal Pictures. This comes from Collider.com, like everything else. Those of you guys want all the news that we get from for the Buzz Reports, go to Collider.com. That's where we get them. But Hans Zimmer has, you know, as a composer for Gladiator, for the Batman movies, The Dark Knight, of course, and Inception. Everyone's still talking about that. I'm still using the, where's my button? You guys hit it for me.
Yeah, we did.
That's why I haven't played it, because you guys hit it for me. But he was talking about that, and he mentions that, you know, everybody knows him now, especially for the Dark Knight theme, which is, you know, taken from the Batman Begins theme also. And of course for Inception, which everybody went to see and can't wait for December 8th when it comes on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
And when it got to the Batman part, he says, and you'll hear him in a second, you know, he says that he actually didn't want to, he wanted to work with Christopher Nolan because he liked him as a great creative guy, but he didn't want to work on Batman.
Oh, all right. Now I get it. But I jumped the gun there.
Christopher Nolan has a way of making you work with him.
Yeah.
So let's listen to that here again from Collider.com, an interview with Hans Zimmer.
This is a Collider.com audio interview.
So, Hans, talk about for a second, when did you first get involved in this, and how it's just, you watch it as a finished movie, and it's difficult to wrap your head around. How do you, when did you get involved? Was it just from a script, like a regular movie?
Well, Chris was mumbling something about an idea at the end of Dark Knight, and then we don't live too far from each other. In fact, it's sort of, you know, the scene with the kids on the beach, that was really us. We lived 100 yards from each other, and Chris phones and goes, hey, do you want to take the kids to the beach? Let me tell you a story. So a lot of it was like that. You know, we'd watch the kids play in the sand, and the two of us would sit in the sun, and I'd be watching him get redder and redder and thinking, crazy Englishman doesn't know how to handle the sun. And then I'd come home, my wife would go, what did you do? Look at you. But so a lot of, and I read the script. I was one of the truly handful of people who was allowed the script.
Does the script make sense? Will you read a script like this?
I'm trying to find the words of describing what it was like reading the script, because Chris is a writer-director, which is very different than reading a script by a writer who gives it to a director, because somehow, if it's a writer-director, you really know that this is the point of view that's going to appear on the screen. And it was so beautifully written. It was just a thrilling read. And because it's full of very precise stage direction, and his language is just gorgeous. You know, so it was a thrill to read. And it all made sense to me, which probably means I'm really, really crazy, because it felt very, you know, there were all sorts of things. There are things in the script which, sort of in retrospect, you go, wow, this is really amazing. And I didn't really read it as how now the zeitgeist perceives it as a movie about dreams. I kept thinking it's a time travel story in the purest sense. And all of us time travel every night, and we never really figured it out, and nobody ever figured out that to make a time travel movie is very easy, and you can base it on real science, which is our dreams.
I'm kind of fascinated with the whole script thing. I don't know if it's color-coded or it's like a pop-up book where you...
No. It was beautifully written, but there is like a squiggly drawing, you know, that tells you, you know, in whose dream and what level you're in. And Chris is very disciplined. When he, you know, what he writes is what he shoots. And, I mean, it was just a joy to work. Everybody says, oh, you know, we're having so much fun on this movie. Usually that's complete bullshit. But on this one, you know, it really was the truth. And he has a way of working. He never goes into overtime. We finished 2 weeks early. It is incredibly inspiring reading a good script. And it's incredibly inspiring being involved right from the word go. You know, I mean, that's really how I try to work. I try to work before they go out and shoot the movie. You know, and there's a weird duty the composer has to the director, which is that first conversation before all the craziness starts up, before the guy gets bombarded with the triviality of shooting a movie. You know, there's that moment of great excitement. We're actually going to make this movie, and why we are making this movie, and what the heart of the movie is. And when the director comes back after being, you know, killed for 9 months on a shoot or something, you know, it's sort of your duty to remind him why that scene is there, or why we were doing it.
Do you feel like it's late for you if you do have to wait to see cut footage to get started? Is that so late in the process?
Yeah, it hasn't. The only time it's happened in recent history was Sherlock Holmes. But, I mean, I think the last, as far back as I can now really remember, it's always been script stage or even before the script. You know, like, just, hey, let's riff on this idea.
Moving away specifically from Inception, you mentioned having Lorne in the room next door. And, you know, I don't know if Inception is a typical Hans Zimmer process, but it, when you're creating a score, I mean, you're a prolific guy and you're working on a lot of stuff. Is it as simple as you at a keyboard in a room by yourself, or is there a team of people that it takes for you to deliver a score with?
Where does it start? It starts, I'll just take you through it. Starts with talking with the director and coming and trying to come up with a concept, you know, which isn't just the notes, but it's the sonic landscape. You know, how do I want this thing to sound? You try to figure out what the colors of this thing are. And then I sit in great paranoia and neurosis and procrastination in my room forever and try to come up with the tunes and come up with the sounds. And then I sort of start opening it up at a certain point. You know, it's I really do believe in this collaborative process. I come from a band culture. I come from, you know, other people in coming in and contributing ideas and you know, jamming. You know, but you can only start jamming if you have a really good intellectual oversight over that, you know, a construction. So it's really like architecture.
But do you jam, so to speak, from the perspective of melody and tunes,
totally.
or this is the palette I'm going to paint with, and I'm going to stick to these sounds for the score?
It's tough on Inception because the tunes are such minimalist little constructs. So, and I was a bit of a dictator about them. You know, it's like because there's so little, so few bits, you have to stay very specific. But, you know, once we had the framework, you know, and most of these pieces are four chord wonders. I mean, I don't have
this right. One.
Yeah.
So this is a minimalist score.
No, it's a rock and roll score. You know, I think there's a minimalist smacks of art and something.
You said it first. I didn't.
I know. No, but you know, people keep talking about it. It's a minimalist score. It's a rock and roll score. And Johnny Marr.
I was just going to say, speaking of rock and roll, you had Johnny Marr from the Smiths playing guitar.
Yeah,
How did that come about?
Well, because I had written the piece that he plays on, you know, mocked it up on some bad stuff. I kept hearing a sound in my head. And at first I didn't even know it was a guitar. And then I suddenly, it took me 3 days. I kept saying to Chris, I got this idea. I just don't know what it is. I can't put my finger on it. And then I realized it was Johnny Marr playing guitar. And you realize that the simpler the notes are and the less notes there are, the more you hear, you know, you hear the personality of the player. And that was really, so I phoned Johnny. I didn't know him, but you know, we both were terrorizing London during the 80s. So, we had enough friends in common and he came over and he was great because he knew what was needed was not to add notes, but to play the notes I'd written with conviction and with balls. You know, as I write, I see these, you know, in my mind's eye, I see these people in front of me. So I'm writing for that guy, you know, and the only odd thing with Johnny was I didn't know I was writing for him until I wrote for him.
Whether it's Chris's next thing or maybe the last time you did this, but is the idea of just sitting down at a piano and writing a score appealing to you, or do you need to play with the toys?
It's not. I don't play with the toys. I have no musical education. I mean, I had 2 weeks of piano lessons. That's my formal education. But I'm of the generation where a new musical instrument was invented called the computer. And so if you ask me to play, I don't. A piano, I don't play it very well, but I can play a computer really well.
I mean, you say you have no musical education. You know, the first time I met you was almost 20 years ago.
And we were
sitting alone in a room with all your gear, and you said, oh, this isn't hard. Anybody can score movies. And I just thought, come on, that's not fair when Hans Zimmer says... And then 20 years later, you're saying, oh, you know, I don't know, I'm not that musically educated.
No, wait. No, but I know how to play the film. You know, I don't see... Look, I think there are real composers. There are real composers, John Adams, Beethoven, Bach, etc. And then there are film composers. And I'm not saying it's anything of a lesser thing. It's just a very different discipline. because I know how to say this language of film really well, and I'm really good, that I know I'm really good at, and that I've really learned. And I started off with, I was an assistant to another film composer who really knew his way around the orchestra, Stanley Myers, but he let me work as an assistant right away with amazing directors like Nick Rhodes and Stephen Frears and, you know, all those great English directors. So I learned from great filmmakers. And I think one of the things which is slightly different is you know, hear people go to university to study music and or film, etc. This was like an apprenticeship, and you were thrown right into the midst of a problem. You know, your my first day was on a Nick Rhodes movie, you know, and Stanley thought I should write the scene, you know, and so I've never written a scene before, and I say, Mr. Rogue, what is it you would like here? And it doesn't matter what the scene was, the answer was great. It was, I would like this, you know, the sound of the earth being raped. And, you know, you could do something, right? You could, you know, oh yeah, Mr. Rogue, here's what I prepared a little earlier, coming right up. No, you knew it was going to be an exciting conversation. You know, you knew it was going to be an inspiring moment. And you know, after a while, you know what the picture is telling you everything.
That's very cool. I think we have time for a couple more quick questions. Yeah, right here.
Chris wanted me to do Batman, and I wanted to work with Chris, but I wasn't sure I wanted to do Batman. Chris doesn't accept no. No is not in his vocabulary. No Hans doesn't want to do it. Doesn't exist. In his vocabulary. And he finally said, So what's stopping you from doing it? And I'm going, because really, I would like to do the dark part. I can't do the happy guy in the, you know, in the whatever car he's driving or whatever. And I don't want to do the lovey-dovey bits, you know. So because I thought, if I commit to this, I just want to go and do the Dark Knight, that guy. He said, well, would you like to, you know, why don't you ask a friend to come and work with you on it? And James and I had always talked about doing something together. And it really was a, you know, it's not like we divided the movie up, but we did divide the movie up, but there's our fingerprints on everything we did. It really was it's impossible to say, but, you know, we started off very shy of each other, and after about a week, it became like, you know, at least three-handed piano. You know, somebody's playing something, and the other guy's sticking the hand in and going, no, what about that note? So, you know, it was... And the other thing I realized was it's very liberating for the director, because really it's a very fragile world being a composer, because, you know, when you play somebody your piece of music for the first time, you're really exposing your inner self, and the director knows it. He tries not to hurt your feelings when he looks you in the eyes and goes, but if it's the three of you in a room, it never becomes that, because it's always a conversation, because, you know, I know if it's, you know, music is indefensible. You play it to somebody and it either resonates or it doesn't. The secondary problem is what we do is we're supposed to be like slightly ahead of the zeitgeist. So it takes people a little while to get used to what you're writing, because it's supposed to be new, you know, and at the same time, so when you play something to somebody, it's really nice when you feel completely lost and you've done the best you possibly can to have somebody next to you going, oh, I have another idea of how we can make this better. So it's
I
like
thought you were
going
to say there's another guy next to you and you can say, oh, he did that one.
Yeah, well, no, you do that too. You do that anyway. Yeah.
All right.
You know, so, all the bad notes?
Yeah, exactly. We had a question over here.
One of the things I try to do is I try to not have a score which sort of sits on top of a movie and sort of looks down on it, but to be, you know, it needs to be come from the inside, and one of, you know, and we bleed into sound design all the time. You know, Richard King, who's the sound designer, and Mel Weston, who works for me, is a synthesist and sort of painter. We really try to create a sonic world and sort of really inhabit it.
Do you, spotting wise, though, speaking of that question,
we never spotted it.
Did you never spot it?
No, we never spotted it because
He just said, put music everywhere except the rain.
Since Chris, you know, I would send over pieces of music, and then... the weird thing was, I would never tell him what I had written the piece for on purpose. You know, sometimes the title would give it away. Pissed Off Mal, actually, you know, I think gave it away. But I would send these pieces over, and part of the experiment was, would he recognize what I would write it for? And it was amazing seeing it after he put these large pieces in, how, you know, that shared dreaming thing was actually working.
All right, well, for me, I know I could keep going on and we could talk
about it. No, you can't because I'm doing a movie for you. You
want me to go back? Yeah, and selfishly, you have to go back to work and everyone's going to go home and probably go to bed. You're going to go back to the studio and go to work. Thank you so much for
coming.
So there you go, another interview from Collider.com. Thanks a lot for that, everybody out there at Collider.com. That was Hans Zimmer, composer for Gladiator, Batman, The Dark Knight, and Inception, of course.
I mean, it sounds like it's so easy just to compose a movie now that after hearing him speak, I might pursue that.
Give it a try if you have the same thing to say afterwards.
I didn't know that he was not really classically or even trained, but he has an ear for it, so that's what makes a difference. You don't have to play an instrument. You just need to have a computer to play it for you.
You know, I used to talk in colleges a lot. They used to invite me to talk to the broadcasting classes.
Yes.
And professors don't like when I tell them, you know, you don't really have to go to school for this stuff because either you have the talent or you don't.
Yeah.
Nobody can ever teach you talent. They can teach this right here. This is the on button. They can teach you that, the basics. But what to do with the microphone, that's a talent that you're either born with or you don't.
Yeah.
And they can teach you, like, you know, like Hans Zimmer, you know, the basics. So mm-hmm. I think he said he took piano lessons for a week or 2 weeks. That counts as his education.
Yeah.
But yeah, when you have the ear for it, when you have the talent for it, you know what comes out is the Dark Knight theme and all the stuff from Inception, which we're still talking about to this day. So we're going to do a replay next hour because I got to take care of some things. But when you watch all your favorite TV shows, and I think you see it during the football games and it played during the World Series, you guys have seen the commercials for Skyline.
Yeah.
Right?
I have, of course.
You want to see it, the movie?
Oh, I know. I am gonna be there.
November 12th. It's getting a lot of buzz everywhere. It started as a small independent film. Yeah. Now it's becoming a huge, not summer, end of summer, blockbuster. But everybody wants to see it. It comes out not this Friday, next Friday, the 12th.
November 12th.
Tomorrow, how about we talk about it?
Oh, of course.
The directors, two brothers, the Strauss brothers. They'll
yeah,
be
I know
on.
Who they are.
Yeah, they'll be on tomorrow. Greg and Colin, they'll be on. Of course, we can talk about Skyline. Alien versus Predator, Requiem, because they did that one also. A lot of stuff. But basically, I want to know everything Skyline, everything you want to know about the commercials, you'll know tomorrow. So that's tomorrow on the Geek Speak Radio show. Again, thanks a lot to Ozzie Gill, writer of 48 Days in Harajuku, Tokyo. 48 in Tokyo is the website up on geekspeakradioshow.com. So we'll do that tomorrow. We'll talk Skyline. Till then, have a great day. Bye-bye.